going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, recently we have been sort of keeping you up to date and informed on the current issues going on in the state of Maryland. Specifically, we've had one-on-one conversations with several of the candidates for governor of Maryland. But tonight, we're sort of taking a more specific focus. We're taking a closer look on the state of the Black community in the first state, the issues and the solutions surrounding the African-American community in Maryland. We're talking about it, and we have the experts in and the community activists in to tell us everything that's happening. The phone lines are open. We want you to be part of this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. On the phone line with us is Darius Stanton. He's the president of Maryland's Black Caucus Foundation. And in studio joining us is Robert Johnson, executive director of My Brother's Keeper of Prince George's County and a member of the Caucus of the African American Leaders. Again, phone lines are open. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Darius Stanton, we are going to start with you. We know that there is a conference that is going on in Maryland this week. It started today and it continues tomorrow, entitled Crisis in the Black Community. Tell us why you believe the conference is needed.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having us this evening on the Daily Drum. HUR has been at the forefront of making sure that our community gets news that is not promoted in other sectors of mass media. So thank you very much for this opportunity. The reason why we call this conference, even in such short notice, I mean, we did it in less than 90 days. Our hat goes off to President Wilson and Dean McFadder here at Morgan State University, along with Bishop Daniels, Dr. Daniels, because when we looked up and we saw all the things that's happening to us in the Black community, we're being massacred. We have killings that are taking place in all of our major cities, where our young people are dying, innocent people are being shot and killed. You know, we were disproportionately impacted by COVID. All of these crises going on in our community. And have you seen anything that resembled a strategic plan from any of our national leaders? Have you seen anything that regarding, you know, this is what we need to do in case of this? Any preparedness for any of these things economically, health-wise, the food deserts that we're dealing with, the infant mortality rates that we're facing? And so when we realized that there was nobody else that was going to step up, we decided that we had to take the bull by the horns and bring our state together, the region together, and start to strategize on how we can address these things. And the most significant thing about it is the fact that 50 years from this point, and this is something Robert talks about all the time, the Gary, Indiana conference took place. And that was 10,000 Black people coming together and addressing the very same issues that we're still dealing with 50 years later. And so we realized that two things must happen. One, we must retool how we lead as leaders, because apparently we haven't been leading in a manner that's going to give us a different result. And number two, we have to change our mindset and focus on our strengths and our assets and not the deficits that everybody else wants to continuously pour out in the media and other facets, but really look at how we are the pioneers, the inventors, the masters of civilization in itself, and really have an opportunity to have Black people feel good about ourselves again. So our focus this weekend, we had a tremendous turnout on our first day for almost 200 people to show up on a Friday, you know, take off from work to be here in the summertime, shows a great deal of commitment. We already have over 350 folks registered to show up, you know, tomorrow. So we're really excited about the fact that people are concerned and they're answering the call.
Robert Johnson, how would you define the crisis? Because that's really the operative word, right? And crisis is a heavy word.
Absolutely. We have a crisis in a number of areas in our community. What we focused on today was voting rights was embedded throughout the conference, but we also talked about legislative policy. We talked about criminal justice areas and environmental justice, also looking at economics and education. So tomorrow we'll focus specifically in the areas of education and economics, but within that, we're going to have over 16 breakout sessions that are going to talk about things like housing, equity, poverty. Poverty being an overarching cause of all of the ills that are within our community, right? When you think about education, it really stems from poverty. If you can't take care of the basic survival instinct for an individual, to ask a child to be successful in school is secondary. To ask a parent to focus on everything else is secondary. They need to take care of that basic need first. So we need to make certain we can address policies that talk about solving the ills of poverty in our neighborhoods, talking about mental health, talking about trauma in our community, but then also how do we reinvest, reclaim, and repurpose our community through economic development and making certain that we can do that as a community. And just a side note, I start to talk about, and I spell community, C-O-M-M, capital U-N-I-T-Y, because we have to have unity in our communities and be part of the solution, S-O-U-L-lution, right? So we're going to need some soul in this, brother.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our conversation tonight is issues in particular in the African-American community and specifically in the state of Maryland. And Robert, let me ask you this, that the conference is going on in Maryland. Are you talking about specifically what is happening in the first state, or is this a broader conversation? Is it just that Maryland is the place where the conversation is being had?
We wanted to get individuals from across different counties to represent the state of Maryland, but to talk about common issues that we share in all of the different counties, and then look at some of these the things regionally as well, and use Maryland as a blueprint for the nation. So we feel as if we can get individuals together from the different areas, regions in Maryland, Prince George's County, the Eastern Shore, Southern Maryland, Baltimore City, to talk about the shared challenges that we have, to strategically plan an agenda around those issues, right? And then be able to bring those issues and solutions to our legislators. And they won't have to tell us that they've developed a black agenda. We, the people, will present that to them, and then they can then find the resources, the human capital, and the timelines to implement them. And what we want to come from this is to start to build a leadership pipeline. People talk about the school-to-prison pipeline all the time. We want to change that mindset and start to build a leadership pipeline in the state of Maryland. And again, roll it out as a national blueprint.
Darius Stanton, who's the president of the Maryland Black Caucus Foundation. Darius, Robert talked about voting. That's the first thing I think Robert mentioned. Interesting enough, President Biden, in talking about the executive order today and helping to protect some of the rights of women and their choice in terms of abortion, he segued into voting, saying, if you want this law to be codified, we need you to go to the polls. Talk about the issue voting in the African-American community, where you see it, and where you see the community's feeling of the importance of voting, at least at this time, at this present time.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about it, you know, President Biden would not be in office today if it were not for African-American voters in South Carolina. If it were not for Clyburn, Congressman Representative Clyburn, calling the state of South Carolina to the polls and black people showing up to make sure that the president was able to go into office. And so, you know, there's no question, does the vote work? Locally here in Maryland, the now Speaker of the House, Adrienne Jones, decided that she was going to take a bold step. In 2017, the Maryland Black Caucus Foundation went to the Black Caucus, Legislative Black Caucus, and presented the concept of developing a 2030 black agenda. And we started to meet with folks all around the state and bringing this agenda together so that we could have a roadmap. And last year, the Speaker of the House, Adrienne Jones, in the state of Maryland said for 250 years, we've had a white agenda in the Maryland's legislative session. This year, we're going to have a black agenda. And what came out of that was the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights was repealed, where it started 50 years ago, with protections that police officers had that civilians did not. A $750 million HBCU bill has been passed that was vetoed by the governor, but because we had enough support in the legislative Black caucus and voters to be able to overturn that veto, now the four HBCUs in the state of Maryland for the next 10 years will receive a total of over $750 million. So the question about the vote, yes, it's very important. But the most important thing is, once you vote, there are three pieces that people have to realize. First, you have to do your homework and your research. Research your candidates. Find out what they've been doing in the community to support you before they got there. Number two, when you vote for them, you got to put your energy into it. If you can donate to a campaign, donate $100 goes a very long way. And last but not least, when they're elected, you've got to still do your part in the community to hold yourself as a community responsible, but then hold the candidate accountable. And, you know, for the president to make another executive order and still not come up with an executive order that supports African-American protection, when you've done it for Asians, when you've done it for Jewish people, when you've done it for others, but you haven't still done it for the people who got you in office, we've got to hold him accountable as well.
Robert, what would I'm going to ask you to sort of piggyback on what Darius said, and maybe Darius has to answer this, but I'm going to give you an opportunity to, Robert. What executive order would you say President Biden should have to protect African-Americans specifically for that group?
Well, in particular, he needs to really start. He started with the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, right? So making certain that African-Americans and underserved individuals across the nation have the opportunity to vote and they have fair representation in the voting booth. But specifically, they campaigned on what they were going to do for our community. They talked about student loans. They talked about health care. They talked about what they were going to do against poverty. So let's hold individuals accountable for that. Look at the issues, not the candidates. That's what we're talking about at the conference. It's really to talk about issues in our community, separating ourselves from candidates, separating ourselves from parties, but literally listening and solving issues related directly to our community. And elected officials that get out of this midterm election and out of this cycle, they will have a blueprint. They will have a map, right? And then we will have a leadership matrix, an accountability matrix, where they don't have to go through the circuit and tell us what they're going to do. We will know what they're supposed to do, and we can hold them accountable for that.
I'm going to follow up right before we go to break, because we've got a couple of minutes. But what is interesting, especially in the governor's race in the state of Maryland, you have three or four candidates on the top of the ticket who are candidates of color. And if they're not a candidate of color, they have a running mate who is. And so you said, Robert, that it really doesn't matter the candidate, it matters the issues. So with this diversity of candidates and people of color, that doesn't matter that they would be more sensitive and in tune to the issues of the African-American community?
What should happen is this. They all should have had a plan for our community. I would look at the committees that helped devise that plan. They have not shown the diversity in those plans, in those committees. So I would look at that. I would look at the individuals that they brought together to identify some of the challenges and issues. I will say to you, all of those individuals have been invited to this. I will say to you, zero have shown up. But maybe they'll show up tomorrow, so I don't want to say
it. Because we have another day. We have another day.
You, Ashley, I did get a call. Anderson Walker is scheduled to show up tomorrow at 8 a.m. I got to give credit where credit is due. So she has confirmed she will be in attendance. She won't. I don't know that she'll be in a speaking role, but she has committed to being here.
And she we should clarify, she is the running mate of Peter Franchot, correct,
Ms. Anderson? That is correct.
Right, and she is running for lieutenant governor. We want to make sure that we let folks know this Crisis in the Black Community Conference is taking place today, which is wrapped up, but also tomorrow, Robert, is taking place. Make sure I've got the time from 8 till 6 p.m., correct?
Yes, absolutely. At Morgan State University, it will be taking place at the Student Center at Morgan State University tomorrow, June 9th.
All right.
July 9th.
July 9th. I do that all the time. All right, folks, you know what's happening. We're going to continue this conversation. Phone lines are open. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're going to take a break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, that's you, Jay. Stay right there. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3, HD2, and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR 96.3. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141, 96.3, HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment tonight. We're talking about the state of Maryland, and we're talking about the state of the African-American community in the first state. Where are we with things, with issues, with solutions? We've got the folks in studio and on the phone line tonight to help us with this conversation, and you can help, too, by giving us a call. Your questions or comments are welcome. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joining us in studio is Robert Johnson. He's the executive director of My Brother's Keeper in Prince George's County and a member of the Caucus of the African American Leaders, and Darius Stanton, president of the Maryland Black Caucus Foundation. Again, phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines. Jay is calling from Germantown with a question or comment. Go right ahead, Jay.
Yeah, thank you for this opportunity you're giving to me tonight to talk to deeper from my heart. If we are black and we vote for senator or congressman in Maryland, we are nothing. They just shake your hand the first day, and next day you are nothing. Congressman, we humiliate you publicly like this because you are black. You ask a question, you answer that question. He find out is wrong. He will humiliate you directly like this. We have a case in senator office since over 13 years. That case never be solved. They make me lose 2 houses in less than 4 months. They check my houses, and at the same time, I went to, they sent me to criminal jail by mistake for 10 days.
All right, well, Jay, we're going to let's try to let our callers jump in on that. So Jay has had some issues, and I think part of his point is, you know, who's in elected office and who can do what, and we've already sort of addressed that issue in terms of voting. Robert, let me ask you about the issue, the economic issue, and what's happening in the state of Maryland. What's your sense of where the state is economically? It is one of the wealthiest states in the nation. We're talking black, white, wherever you go. Now, we also know that, you know, Prince George's County used to be the most affluent black county in the nation. Now it's Charles County, but one in two are in America. What's your sense of where the state is in terms of the African-American community and economics?
Well, when you, just as you indicated, when you look at it by the numbers, Maryland is sitting in a very good space, right? But you need to look at the gap in the disparity in wealth within our communities. So there is a huge gap with between other communities and the African-American community. Our gap is also, for the African-American community, our gap is large, is wide for black people in Maryland than it is nationally. I would agree with that. But the let's be forward thinking and say, how many opportunities do we have at obtaining contracts? It's not a fair, it's not the same number that we represent in the state. We represent close to 30% population in the state, but we get 3% of the contracts. Why is that? The major projects that are happening in Maryland right now, you look at the red line, the purple line, and all that. What percentages of the contracts are going to minorities, in particular, black people? When we say minorities, that gets watered down a little bit. So we have to be cautious when we say minorities, because that's inclusive of quite a few communities, right? So we want direct impact. Look at what pours into the wealth gap, obviously, is education. And that talks about the opportunity gaps. And we can't talk about wealth without talking about opportunity. So how many opportunities do we have to really get on the ground floor of investment and redevelopment within the state? Oftentimes, we're the individuals buying the property after it has already been established. We're not the developers that are coming in and developing the property. So let's look at that. The major projects, as indicated, we're the subcontractors, not the major contractors there. We need to be at the head of the table and not get any subcontracts. So the wealth nationally, absolutely, we're sitting in a pretty good state, but when you look at the disparity and the opportunities that are provided for the black community, it's in despair. I would say that we're trending in the wrong direction, because you see that housing is going up. A livable wage in Maryland, people would say, they're talking about raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. A study at MIT says in this area, in the DMV, it should be $27 an hour. So $15 an hour is not a livable wage in Prince George's County. $15 an hour is not a livable wage in Baltimore or Northern Virginia or the DMV. So let's look at the wages are high, but the cost of living outpaces the wages.
Darius, let's talk a little bit about leadership, specifically in the African-American community. And Robert, I'll let you sort of chime in on this, too. Some would look at you both as leaders within the black community. But oftentimes, when you're talking about movements from the ground up, should we be looking for one person who is going to lead? You know, we were talking earlier today about, and I had mentioned, you know, Martin Luther King. Many people don't realize that there were a lot of problems with him and SNCC, or at least SNCC with him, because they called him Here Comes the Lord, and they looked at it as a top-down thing where they felt like it should be a bottom-up. So where are we in terms of leadership in the black community? Should the community be looking for a few to lead, or should it be more of a grassroots movement?
Well, you know, it's a great time to talk about leadership. And I want to credit my partner, Robert Johnson, to shift when he said earlier about it's important for us to shift the narrative. You know, we have to take control of the messaging that's being presented around the black community. So people always talk about the school-to-prison pipeline. They're quick to bring that up. You know, the lie that was purported by the Ford Foundation, I believe, Jinx Morton brought it out in his documentary, where he showed that they talked about more black men were in jail than in college. And you had other people, leaders, that were going around saying this and talking about it as it was a talking point, which was completely, you know, a farce. There were half, they took 6 months of college enrollment nationally and a year's worth of jail enrollment. And that's where they even came up with that, when they looked in the back of the book and they studied it. So, you know, in order to develop leadership, you know, I was trained that we need a round table of leadership, not a head where somebody needs to kiss the ring and need to go through that person or one person. We need a round table, because the round table, if you go anywhere in the world, when they show up at business meetings, they don't show up with one or two people. They show up with six or seven people on each side of the table, because they recognize that we all have various strengths and assets, and we're not going to see everything, but we need to allow people to be able to be best at their strengths. And then the other thing that is really key, you know, we're focused right now, we have a whole platform called Retooling Leadership, and we're focused on, number one, making sure we create a succession plan, that we lead with succession, that we share the microphone, that we share the stage, that we share the podcast, or whatever medium that's out there to get exposure. I've been doing this for 30 years. I was the youngest drug czar in the country. But the reason being is because somebody gave me an opportunity. And so we have to give young people an opportunity. So in terms of leading, we've got to make sure that we put our egos in our back pocket. We got to make sure that we allow to lead with succession in mind. We have to put our people over politics, and we have to put our principles over profit. And last but not least, we definitely have to lead with the environment in mind. This is a very staggering stat that I want to provide you with. In the state of Maryland, there are more chemical concentration of plants in the southern Maryland region that cause cancer like you could not believe. There's nowhere else in the country where they have nuclear power plants concentrated in one area as it is in southern Maryland. And it's not just black people that are suffering. There are white people that are suffering from that. But how did that happen? Somewhere along the line in the leadership in the state of Maryland, they allowed it to go down. And that's because people put profit over people. And that no longer can be the case. So when we look for leadership now, we're looking for people that are going to hold ourselves accountable. We held ourselves accountable at this conference and said, even the people who are in this room have not done enough that we could do to make sure that things change. So we're making sure that this happens. With this crisis in the Black Community Conference, number one, we're giving credit to our ancestors. But we're building something where young people are involved. We had 25 students from Morgan State University's Upward Bound in our plenary session this morning. That's how serious we are to make sure we pass the baton of leadership.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guests tonight are organizers of Crisis in the Black Community Conference that is going on this week. Yesterday was the first day. Tomorrow it is still happening, and so if you want to be part of it, make sure you get out to Baltimore and Morgan State University where that is happening. Robert, I thought one of the things that was interesting that I read in some of the notes about the conference and the issues that are going on is that some of the wording, right, and I saw Civil War, and I saw Reconstruction and post-Reconstruction, and that, you know, the African-American community is under attack. And we talked earlier about the term crisis and how progress has been lost. Talk to me a little bit about that sense of tying that historical time, you know, 150 years ago, post-Reconstruction, and folks who don't know about Reconstruction, is that was the time when blacks had some actual equal rights for a bit. And then after Reconstruction, those all were taken away. So is that what you see happening now, some version of that, some of that progress that had been made, it's starting to sort of recede?
You absolutely see that some of the process has started to recede, and actually it's been verbally stated that we're going to go back, that the people want to go back to the second Reconstruction. It is not a secret. People have actually said it, right? If you look at some of the recent activities with the SCOTUS, if you look at some of the activities 2 to 3 years ago, you would see, you'd say, hey, you know what, this nation is going backwards. We're becoming more divided.
And you tie this decision, Roe v. Wade decision, that you tie that to that sort of moving back in progress to the African-American community as well, right? I mean, that's one of the issues also that you state will affect the African-American community
you
in particular.
You can directly tie that back to voting, right? Because the individuals that have voted, or chose not to vote during that election cycle, allowed another individual to come in and appoint people to the bench, appoint individuals to the district. So, 45 had the opportunity to appoint so many judges, right, that directly influence policy in our community. And that's why we need to inform and educate individuals about how local politics happening.
Make sure folks know who 45 is. They may not know who you're talking
about. I didn't want to say any names, right? I didn't know how far we could go with it.
No, you can do that.
So when if you're in action.
Who is 45? Who
are you talking Donald Trump.
Right, okay.
Right, so when we're talking about voting and the inactivity of voting, individuals say, well, you know what, I don't have anything to vote for, or, you know, my vote doesn't matter. A no vote is the same as a vote for the opposition. Right, depending on who, and it doesn't make a difference who you side for, right? If you're not voting, it's counting as a vote for the other party, right? So we need to educate and inform individuals about local politics, state politics, and the impact of federal policy. And when people can tie that together, they clearly understand how voting impacts them individually, financially, and has long-lasting impact over their lives, and more importantly, the lives of their children as well. The individuals on the Supreme Court are going to be there for 25 to 30 years. They're going to outlive, they're going to have policies that are going to outlive all of us, right? So,
and themselves.
And probably. Themselves, absolutely.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the state of the African-American community, specifically in the state of Maryland and broader as well. Darius, tell me, where do you see the issue of housing right now in the state of Maryland? Where is it, and in terms of the African-American community, where are we with that situation?
I'm so glad you asked that question. We're at a real crisis in our community. It really stemmed back in, it started with the Clinton administration, to be quite frank, because the Housing and Urban Development, HUD, took a significant change, and they started creating something called Hope 6 Communities, which basically was a strategy to redevelop public housing And public housing at first was not created for black people, by the way. It was created for white women whose husbands had gone away in the war. But now what's happening is they're closing these public housing communities across the state. Some are being redeveloped, but they're, as they close them, the people are not able to, in a lot of instances, to come back to those properties, or they're closing them and sending them into communities that have been warring and having, you know, fights and shootings against each other since the parents and the grandparents. And so now you've got schools that are actually coming, you know, being merged. High schools that were, you know, rivals are now being forced to go to the same school. And there's not even any type of intervention, any programming, any community conferencing to really help bring these communities together. You know, so we're seeing a great deal of displacement. We're seeing a significant amount. You'd be very surprised if you spoke with the community colleges and found out how many students that were attending community college were homeless. So the African-American community is very in deep, deep trouble when it comes to affordable housing. And that's not just for people who are unemployed and on public assistance. That's for people who are, you know, as Robert talked about, working, you know, barely livable wage jobs. Who have to work two or three jobs to make ends meet, and then you have hold, other situations.
Why don't you hold that thought, Darius, and we're going to pick up on it. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Insight segment. Our conversation tonight is the African-American community in the state of Maryland, the state of things right now for black folks in the first state. We're going to continue this conversation. This is the Insight segment right after this timeout. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Darius, you wanted to finish up your point. We were talking about housing and its effects in regards to the African-American community.
Yeah, so I really like to believe in, thank you, in lifting solutions. So one of the solutions, because we are in a housing crisis, one is to really consider where possible, you know, really pooling resources. Families should stay together where possible. I know it's tough to live with each other, but right now we're talking about, you know, economics, that a situation is not going to get better in the foreseeable future. And so it's time for us to pool resources. So families should start considering where possible coming together, buying a house, splitting the mortgage so that we now have something that your name is on. Number two, don't sell your grandmother's house.
Mm.
Don't sell your grandmother's house. Your grandmother and grandfather worked hard in a time when it was almost impossible for black people to even get loans. They were able to pay the house off. They left the house to the family. And we're still, unfortunately, selling for pennies on the dollar. It's too hard. The market is so high. It's so hard to get a house right now. The houses, you know, are skyrocketing. So it's really, really important that we take the advantage of legacy in real estate and save our grandmother's house. And last but not least, when you have the opportunity, do yourself a favor and jump in and pool and buy some property. You'll save you on your taxes. You now have a write-off. You have something you can invest in. We have got to stop spending our money on things that are not going to pay us back. Cars, jewelry, pocketbooks. You know, these things are not tangible assets that are going to turn around and give us anything in return. And we've got to stop selling our grandmother's houses and start pooling our resources so we can live and earn resources in our family property together.
Well, Darius, I should have had you call my mother a couple years ago because they sold my grandparents' house.
I tell you, it's a travesty.
Yeah, but, you know, when you have multiple folks owning it, sisters and brothers, and you can't quite figure out evenly who's going to take care of it. But anyway, that's another story.
But, you know, and that's the thing. We've got to step up. Like, we've got to get past the emotion of, I don't like my sister, I don't like my brother. You know, we've got to look beyond that, because at the end of the day, we need a place for our grandchildren and where they're going to go. We've got to hold on to that property so we can give them a leg up.
Well, property is hard to come by, and especially nowadays. And if you're trying to buy here in the D.C. area, you're really in trouble. Robert, let's shift for a minute. You know, we've talked about the issues in the African-American community. We talked about leadership. We talked about voting, economics, education, housing, all issues that are important to all citizens, but specifically, you know, especially African-American communities, and especially here in Maryland. And I talked a little bit about sort of movements from sort of bottom up, and we're talking grassroots. And so when you're talking about the crisis in the Black community and sort of how to go about finding solutions and fixing the problem, you see it as a multifaceted approach, right? Just not you and Darius and a few of those leaders. Talk about that.
Absolutely. And that goes back, that ties back to the question that you asked, who is going to represent the Black community as a leader? And it has to be multifaceted. It has to be a layered approach where we have, and what we're focusing on at the conference is to really have a multitude of different organizations coming together. We want grassroots organizations to come together. Clergy, the United Black Clergy. We have the Caucus of African American Leaders. We have Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle in Baltimore. We've had individuals from the NOI, Nation of Islam, there today. We've had individuals from, again, the United Black Clergy, and so many men of faith and women of faith there as well. Business leaders, elected officials and non-elected officials. But we want this to be, we want everyone to really share. And the one thing that we share is the passion and, more importantly, the commitment to identify challenges and to provide solutions. I'll take you back to what happened in Gary, right? In 1972, 10,000 individuals came together, 400 organizations came together. They were so targeted in their approach, so specific with what they wanted to do. They did not want to align with a party.
And let's be sure that listeners know, when you say in Gary, this was a conference.
This was a conference in Gary, Indiana, home of Michael Jackson.
That's right.
Right? So 10,000 individuals, over 400 organizations. They were so specific on wanting to stay focused on issues. In 1972, when Shirley Chisholm was running for president at that time, she wanted to be endorsed at the conference. They said, no, we will not endorse you at the conference. We will still support you. But we don't want this conference to be aligned with any party affiliation or any candidates. And that's what we're about. We want our community organizers, our community groups, our faith-based organizations, our leaders to say we have to remove the faces, remove the parties, remove the individuals, and talk about issues. And that's how targeted we have to be. We have to take this problem so seriously, right, that we say, you know what, I can't attach a name to this. We can't attach a face to this. It is impacting all of us. Anything that happens on the Eastern Shore, I'm responsible for that. Something that happens in Baltimore City, the crime that's happening in Baltimore City, it impacts us. Something that happens in Prince George's County, it should impact others in Southern Maryland. And that's the way we have to think about it. Anything that affects the least of us impacts all of us. And until we think like that as a collective, right, we will continue to have some challenges. Again, community. With the UNITY, right? Queen Latifah, UNITY, right?
You know, folks only know her for The Equalizer, depending on your age, you know, or the TV show she was in. So I think you might be dating yourself. But I know what you're saying.
Exactly. Right.
Darius, sort of piggybacking a little bit about Robert, what he was saying about what affects us. The insurrection at the Capitol, sort of the attempt to destabilize the government. Where does that fit, you believe, in the larger issue of communities, African-American communities, and the, I would assume, the threat on sort of progress, voting suppression? Can you speak to that, where that sort of falls in line with what's happening at the symposium and the conference this week?
Well, you know, it's such a stark contrast when you look at how we're treated as African Americans versus the white citizens of the United States of America. If it were Black people that attacked, like the Nation of Islam or the New Black Panther Party or the Black Caucus Foundation, you know, I mean, if it were Black people that attacked the U.S. Capitol, do you think that there would not have been bloodshed that day? When you look at what transpired with the young man who was just shot over 90 times fleeing police officers, and he was killed without shooting, without, you know, they said that they found a weapon in the car, but he had no weapon on him. Yet a gentleman killed six people, injured 30, and they arrested him without incident. And he's alive today to talk about him killing, potentially, allegedly killing those six people and injuring 30. Those instances and examples happen all the time. But what we have to recognize is we have a responsibility first to take care and look in the mirror and address the issues that are in, that we can control. And one of the things that we can control is we can control what we're eating that is putting us in a position to address our overall health. When you think about what transpired with COVID, 1.7 million people annually die of heart disease, sugar diabetes, obesity, and cancer. And unfortunately, African-Americans are at the top of the list in heart disease, which is the number one killer in America. And this was pre-COVID. And so we've got to take responsibility to make sure that we educate our children at home and that we're feeding our children things at home that are going to help us to be more productive. And so one of the things we've been talking about are economic strategies that would allow us to become industry creators, that become innovators, content creators, pooling our resources. Kioba is a group inside of Baltimore City. You spoke about the type of leadership. These are brothers who are, you know, entrepreneurs doing their own thing or just everyday dads. And they've come together and are now building houses all over this, renovating homes all over the city of Baltimore, making a profit off of those homes, but also putting people who normally wouldn't be able to afford a home, helping them get their, you know, financial situation together so they now can purchase this refurbished home and giving, you know, black communities home ownership. So the conference is really giving us an opportunity to find out what can we do differently to make the next 50 years results be results that we're proud of instead of the Kerner Commission report that showed 50 years of backward inclines except in education. But what good is an education if your financial situation is worse, if your home ownership is worse, and last but not least, your health is worse, and you're still being incarcerated at the highest levels? Then the education system is not working.
Robert Johnson, before we leave us, let folks know what's happening tomorrow and why they should be there.
Absolutely. So tomorrow, come on out to the Crisis in the Black Community Conference at Morgan State University with President Wilson. Also, with I want to give a plenty of love to Dean Anna McFadden, Dr. Kevin Daniels, and the entire Morgan State staff. They've done a phenomenal job at hosting us. It will take place at the Student Center at Morgan State. Bring your beautiful black families. We want you to come and represent our beautiful black community. Let's make a difference together.
Robert Johnson, Executive Director of My Brother's Keeper for Prince George's County and member of the Caucus of African American Leaders, and Darius Stanton, President of Maryland's Black Caucus Foundation. Thank you both for being with us and for all that you do.
Thank you.
That's the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Friday, July 8th. I'm Bramante Bright in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night and a fantastic weekend.